John Defterios, let me tell you, is the emerging markets editor at CNN, and he's based in Abu Dhabi, where he joins us on the line. John, good talking to you. Thanks for being with us.
Yeah, nice to be back after the break.
John, we're going to talk with oil, a very important commodity here in the Middle East, and an awful lot of stuff impacting the price of oil today. Brent crude is actually higher as we speak at about $113 a barrel. You've got the Venezuela refinery fire. You've got hurricane or tropical storm Isaac in the United States. How are you reading all this?
Well, it's almost, in a sense, a perfect storm for North and South America, with both the refinery fire that you're suggesting and the tropical storm, which may gather momentum because it had to shut down so much refining and production capacity in the Gulf of Mexico, which is the main artery, as you know, going from the south there into the heartland of American distribution from that point forward. So they had that lesson from Hurricane Katrina in 2005. And they're not taking any chances, so they batten down the hatches, shut down production, shut down refinery in preparation for that. The U.S., although they don't get along with Venezuela, are probably the number one client for Venezuela when it comes for oil. Venezuela produces nearly 3 million barrels a day, Richard, as you know, and that refining complex handles nearly a million barrels a day, so a third of their overall refining capacity goes through there. I spoke to a former senior director, a former board member of PDVSA, the state oil giant, and he was very critical, suggesting for the time that Hugo Chavez has been president of Venezuela that you can't really see the difference between the state itself and the oil company. He kind of uses it as his personal piggy bank, PDVSA financing hospitals, financing schools, funding infrastructure. And there's some suggestion on the ground that because of the spending that he's done to build his popularity and to build his social network in terms of re-election bids going forward, is that they have not spent at the proper levels in terms of infrastructure and safety for PDVSA, that this probably could have been avoided. Now, PDVSA's position on this is that they've spent $6 billion over the last 3 years, and something like this should not have happened. But it's lifting the lid on some of the practices of Hugo Chavez, because this is the first time he's had a major challenger. So I just invite our listeners to look out for the October elections, because they're going to be quite heated after this accident, and this will be very political. I thought it was interesting also President Obama's statements for Americans not to take any chances here. So he's making sure that the Federal Emergency Management Agency, FEMA, is ready, that the states are ready. So they're not taking any chances, but this will likely keep pressure on oil prices, at least in the near term, because we were not expecting this. And it comes with oil prices, as you're suggesting, hovering around $110 to $115 a barrel, which is not low.
It's interesting you mentioned the politics of oil prices. Sean Evers of Gulf Intelligence is on a little bit later on, and I know he's going to talk about the strategic oil reserve in the United States and the politics of gasoline prices at the pump in the build-up to U.S. election. They are high and rising, and that is not good for votes for the incumbent, is it?
No, it's not. And in fact, we've had this discussion before on the program. This race is turning out to be much closer than most would have expected now, leading into the Republican National Convention, and the bounce that you normally get out of this is one thing. But it is a tight race. But I also think for the first time in many, many years, that there's a very clear, distinct choice of what people are going to be looking for in America. Is it less government now, particularly with the vice presidential candidate Ryan in the mix? Is it less government that you want? Because he's talking about an overhaul of Medicare as we know it, and the overhaul of the Social Security, because there's an underfunding measure. And he wants to slice spending so that you can preserve a different formula for Medicare and the like that I was referring to. The very opposite from President Obama. He's suggesting that the government have a very defined role, and that we're not going to start going to a voucher system for health care spending or a voucher system here for Social Security and allow it to go into the equity markets to take some of your retirement and put into equity markets from the government. So there's very different views of where America should go in the future. The reality is that the debt load's very, very high. The middle class has shrunk 10% over the last 30 years. So they did a poll with the Pew Research Center recently suggesting that 85% of the middle class said they're worse off now than they were just 10 years ago. And I think, personally, this is the battleground. It's the middle class that feels betrayed by the government. Do they blame that on President Obama, or do they go back and suggest that the financial crisis is something that he inherited, and who has the best recipe to go forward? I think that's the big debate right now. And conversely, when I've had this conversation here with a number of different economists and the rest, you can't lead as a G1 nation, if you want to put it in that context of the G8 industrialized nations of the G20 that we often talk about. You can't lead when you have spiraling health care costs and spiraling education costs, because it erodes your ability to for the middle class to grow and then to invest and to buy houses. And this is extremely at the heart of what we're talking about here, why the middle class feels so squeezed right now. The lower class has dropped, the upper class has dropped, but the middle class is taking the squeeze right now. And I think this is the real fundamental thing we should be watching out for. What is that center ground talking about here as they go to the polls for November 7th? Inflation is not a real threat right now to them. The rising cost of education is. The rising cost of health care is, though. And they have real problems with unemployment. So, you know, still an 8% unemployment rate in America is very high, Richard.
John, as a humble outsider looking in, when I look at these fairly deep ideological rifts in America in terms of policy and shifting to the left or shifting to the right, and I get that debate, but the paralysis in Washington with different houses and different incumbents, is anything going to change if we get Obama in or if we get Romney in? Obama has kind of had his hands tied, hasn't he, for 4 years. He's not been able to get anything done because of the checks and balances that are there in Washington.
It's because I think he had to push through so much at the front end when he inherited the financial crisis that he went with a very big and dominant role of government. So there is the mounting record debt. The quantitative easing that's come into place has kind of run its course, and people are wondering, should they do it again? We don't know the implications of that, but when he did so, you know, the bailout of GM and the bailout of Ford was bigger than most had thought, and that's why you see them at loggerheads within Congress. The checks and balances are there, but the polarization is awful, and I think it's not the system itself, it's the polarization within the two different parties right now, which is causing the problem. And, you know, who gets the squeeze in this sort of case? It's not stopping the rising cost of health care. It's not stopping the rising cost of education. It's not restructuring the housing market right now. And this is the problem. The banks are not lending because there's so many bad loans on the books and foreclosures are at a record high. And it's just starting to bottom out. But in time for President Obama to get reelected, probably it's going to be a huge challenge for him. It's tighter than I expected. I do expect, though, that the foreign policy decisions that he has made, whether it be with Osama bin Laden or what has transpired in Afghanistan and the management of the Arab Spring from the U.S. perspective, is some pluses that he could play later in the season here. And I'm talking about October, November ahead of the election. And that's when foreign policy, I think, will play a role and not just be the economic debate, which is a coin toss right now, to be candid.
One final story that I know you're covering on Global Exchange brought a wry smile to my face. And this is Unilever declaring that it's changed its marketing strategy for Europe to sell products in Europe like it does in poorer developing economies. Tell us more about this.
Extraordinary. Yeah, it's extraordinary. This is the head of their European operations in an interview with the Financial Times of Deutschland. I think it was just kind of a general interview they were expecting. And it wasn't a bombshell, but it kind of gives you a perspective. One of the largest consumer goods companies in the world saying, look, those little tiny sachets that we sell in Africa, the smaller detergent packets that we sell in the Philippines or in Southeast Asia, and some of these less developed emerging markets around the world, we're transporting those strategies to Europe, particularly Southern Europe, because the economy is so depressed right now. Consumers can't enjoy the luxury brands that Unilever has on the market, so they're rebranding certain products to an economical level. They're reducing the size of the products because people can't put up for the bigger outlays for bigger chunks of the bottles, for example, or large cereal boxes or soaps and other detergents. It's extraordinary, but he's suggesting that this is a strategy that could be in place for another 5 to 10 years. So you often ask, you know, a financial market expert, how do you see Europe? They give you a much more shorter-term perspective. This is one of the largest companies in the world, certainly right up next to Nestle and the other Procter's and Gamble's of the world, the major, you know, global giants, suggesting this is something they're looking at for 5 to 10 years and the state of Europe as it is today. It's very telling about the drag of the Eurozone debt crisis, particularly in the southern half of Europe, and the sort of impact it could have on the corporations and their earnings for years and years to come.
John, great to get your views. Thanks indeed.
Nice to talk to you. Take care.
John Defterios there, CNN. You can watch him live. Global Exchange, weeknights at 8 o'clock.